Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast with tips, tricks, and coaching discussion for all cyclists, from beginners to advanced, from casual riders all the way up to masters racers. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about not fearing your group rides. But before we get to the show, I've got a little bit of housekeeping to get out of the way. First up, those of you who are listening to this podcast from my website will notice there's some changes going on right now. I'm actually in the process of doing a little bit of website and web updating. I'm actually trying to make the whole website and the whole tailwind-coaching.com site a little bit more user-friendly. You'll notice I've added a few more tabs to the top of the page, taking you to things like product and event reviews, coaching discussions, quick links basically to all my coaching, coaching-related posts on the blog side of things, and also a page that will outline in detail and show any previous editions of this Tailwind Coaching podcast. If you happen to miss one, you can actually go right over there. The excerpt is available. You can see what the topic of each, you know, podcast is, and you can take it for a spin and see if you've missed anything. Okay. Secondly, Black Friday is over. I want to say welcome to December to everybody. My Black Friday promotion was very, very nice. I got a bunch of you with training plans. You took advantage of that 20% off pricing, and I'm looking forward to helping you achieve new and better things in the coming months. That being said, like I said, it is December. Right now it is December 1st, and instead of thinking about the holidays, maybe you should be thinking at this point about starting your base training for next season, especially those of you who have early season commitments, early season crit series, early season races such as Tour of the Battenkill. Better now than never to start your base training and really, you know, start working on things. Never too early to start your base training and get things squared away. Okay. With that being said, let's get on to the meat of today's show. And again, that is not fearing your group rides. Now, this topic actually came about very recently. In fact, as I was reading a discussion thread on Facebook, a couple of people are putting together some group rides, some winter paced group rides, and everybody knows that winter paced group rides tend to be generally slow, social, and you know, a little bit less intense. Let's put it that way. More motivational than anything else. And this this particular Facebook thread, let me actually get to it here. One particular person is commenting that you know, they need to really up their mileage and really work on their endurance, but they'd love to join a ride sometime next year. And no idea what my endurance is yet, and I would never inflict myself on a group. Those are exact quotes, and I won't, you know, I won't give away where that came from and what discussion that came out of. But needless to say, it got me thinking a little bit about the topic of group rides. And the other thing that kind of got me thinking about that, you know, as well, was really something that came out of my last podcast. My last podcast was the Battenkill podcast about how to, well, it wasn't really Battenkill, but it was about how to integrate group rides into your training plan. And I was using my Battenkill podcast as an example for for that training plan, group ride integration, if you will. I did get a little bit of flack from that podcast. A couple people had emailed me and suggested that, you know, maybe I came down a little bit hard on the idea of group riding and how group ride, you know, group riding has helped benefit them in many ways. And I really just want to, you know, set the record straight off the bat and say that, you know, group riding in itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. What happens to be a bad thing is the fact that many people don't pay specific attention to their workout and training goals on a group ride and end up either with no benefits to their training, or at worst, they end up taking a step back and losing some of the skills and fitness that they've already developed on their own. So I'm going to go ahead and say once again to remember that on group rides, the group does not care about you. And hear me out when I say that. The group does not care about you in respect that it doesn't care about your individual training goals. It doesn't care about your muscular endurance blocks. It doesn't care about your one-legged pedaling drills. It doesn't care about your spin-up drills. It doesn't care about any of that stuff. The group cares about its goal, that 20-mile-per-hour average for the ride, that, you know, double pace line at 25 miles an hour for the last 6 miles of the ride back into town. It cares about setting someone up for the town line sprint on the way back to the shop. Okay? That's what the group cares about. And in that respect, the group cares about you as well. So don't believe that, you know, the group has no interest in seeing you succeed. You're a part of the group. You have to succeed for that group to succeed as well. So keep that in mind. But that being said, if you really want to go out there and you want to hit a group ride and you want to do well at a group ride, and when I mean do well, I mean be able to sit at the front of the group ride, to play the game, to accelerate when you have to, and to ride some of those other people right off your wheel when you need to, you have to do a few things and make some preparations before you show up at that ride. And this is what we're going to talk about, is what those preparations are, how to utilize them in a group ride, and how to get the most out of your group ride. All right. Now, all of that being said, these kind of tips are going to be very, very useful to someone who's not doing a regular shop ride. If you're doing, like, the Sunday coffee ride, where the goal is to ride out to the cafe, get a cup of, you know, a demitasse of espresso and come back, don't be a dummy, really. You're not going to want to be blowing up the Sunday coffee ride. So save these kind of tips for more competitive group rides. Maybe that Saturday morning hammer fest of a shop ride. Maybe that's where you're going to drop these techniques in. But be selective, okay? And think about these as a sequence. These are all things that you need to add into your group ride, but you also need to add into your daily or weekly solo training. You have to practice these things before you get to the group ride. So, you get to the shop maybe 15, 20 minutes early. What happens? You got a bunch of guys standing around, talking shop, sitting there, and they've got their thumb up their butt, you know, they're just chit-chatting. No warm-ups going on. Well, okay, everybody rolls out and they want to warm up as they're on the bike. But here's the thing. Everybody, most coaches, most people you talk to, even a lot of coaches say you want to warm up aerobically. You want to prime the system. I don't necessarily agree with that, because just sitting on the bike, just pedaling, is going to warm you up aerobically. Your aerobic engine will kickstart as you start pedaling the bike. What I like to see my athletes do is to go for more of a neuromuscular warm-up. See, the way the body works, there's a connection between your brain, which consciously tells your body what to do. In this case, turn over the pedals, through your spinal cord, through those nerve roots that come out of your spine and into your legs, and then there's a synapse connection between those nerve endings and your muscles. If that doesn't all work well in unison together, how can you possibly have a good ride? So you need to warm up your neuromuscular system, that interface between your brain, your spinal reflexes, your Golgi tendon organs, your muscle spindle fibers, your muscle fibers, the synapse in between the nerve and the muscle, all those physiological key points of action need to be warmed up. How do you do that? You sit at the back of the group, you spin. And I don't mean just spin, lollygag along. I mean, you really rev up there. 110, 120 RPM, 130 RPM, almost to the point where you're going out of control. Don't let your ego drive you to the front of the pack and let you just hammer it from the get-go. Sit at the back, sit in the draft of other people, and just take it easy and warm up. Gradually start off with a very easy gear. I'll often start off in my 3927 gear, which is incredibly small of a gear. It's a remarkably small gear. If you actually look at the gear ratio, that's the kind of thing you should be using on a recovery day. But I digress. Start in an easy gear with a very high cadence, very low pedal tension. You don't want to start that muscle tension building up quickly if you can avoid it. You want to warm up that neuromuscular system first, get everything clicking and firing in unison, and then slowly add tension as the ride continues. By the first 10-15 minutes, you can certainly shift down from that granny gear to 3, maybe even 4 cogs if you're feeling good. Okay? As the ride progresses a little further, you want, at this point, your aerobic system's already warmed up because you've been pedaling. At this point, you can start adding more and more tension and start warming up that muscular endurance system, that muscle tension system, basically the system you're going to use when you hit those hills. So you can add more tension into the system, and you can start priming that muscular tension system and get that thing firing on all cylinders. That's really how your sequential warm-up should go when you start off on a group ride. Start off with a neuromuscular warm-up, fast spinning, no tension, little tension. Your aerobic system will follow as you start to add tension into that system as you start to progress through that neuromuscular warm-up. And once your aerobic system's primed, once your neuromuscular system's firing, clicking all together, then you warm up that muscular endurance system, add some more tension, and really start testing things. Once you've about 20 minutes into a ride, 20-25 minutes into a ride, then you're ready to go. You're ready to roll out into the front of the group and start hitting it fairly hard. Start doing your pulls, start rotating through the group. But until that point, you really should be sitting at the back, warming up, treating your body like the performance machine that it really is. All right. Now, moving on to the next thing that we're going to discuss, we're going to talk about hiding from the wind. Okay. And hiding from the wind is probably, next to a warm-up, is probably the most important, one of the most important. Actually, it's hard to really put a level of importance on these things, because these things are all necessary for a successful group ride. But honestly, hiding from the wind is basically, it is a key point of having a successful group ride. See, it's very simple to point out that wind resistance is the main thing that cyclists need to overcome, the main energy drain on any cyclist. On a flat road with no wind, to increase your speed by 1 mile per hour over basically 16-17 miles an hour, maybe 18 miles an hour, when you get into those upper teens, low 20s, to increase your speed another mile per hour requires an output of energy that ends up being multitudes of 4, 6, 8 times the power you needed previously to overcome just wind resistance alone. Add to that hills, wind, headwinds, sidewinds, things like that, and you can understand why hiding from the wind can save you amazing amounts of energy. And this is something that a lot of beginners, and not even beginners, but intermediate and even some advanced riders don't really have down. I've seen this so many times. And how many times have you guys seen this? You show up at your group ride and you're rolling through the pace line, and who do you find a draft? You're going to find the guy who's tall, 6'1", 6'2", big, maybe 180, 200 pounds, whatever the case may be. Sure, he's strong as hell. He's strong as an ox. But he's also sitting up. His upper body's at about 45 to 55 degrees, sitting upright, acting like a giant parachute, just sucking up all that wind resistance. That's the guy I find to ride behind almost every time. Why? Because if I'm sitting behind somebody and drafting that person, I'm saving anywhere between 20 and 30%, maybe even more, energy. I'm going to repeat that. Between 20 and 30% of the energy that I would use if I was on the front of the pack, I will save by drafting somebody. Maybe more if the circumstances are good. If I have that huge 6'1", 6'2", 200-pound guy who's sitting up like a sail, maybe I'll save even more energy. Maybe I'll save 50% energy. Okay? Beginners, intermediates, people who are new to group rides or nervous about group rides, get low. Get aero. Hide from the wind. Pick somebody and draft the hell out of them. It's one of the best ways to save energy, and it's one of the best ways that even if your fitness is not up to snuff, you can actually sit there in that group, in a group that's stronger than you are, you can sit there and you can hang with that group. You can hang with that group all day if you have a great draft to hang out behind. That's an ideal situation, and it's a great way for somebody to really get involved in group riding if they're nervous about it or they're not familiar with the group. You don't have to put out much energy. You can ride with a group that's much stronger if you ride smart. You get low, you stay aero, and you draft somebody who's nice, steady, and solid, and of course big if you have the choice. So another tip for those group riders who are new, don't be afraid if someone's stronger. Remember, you save more energy by staying behind them and drafting them. So if you're nervous about it, remember that. Take that into account and don't be nervous about it, because that's how we all do it. We've all been there. All right. Third thing we need to discuss, and this one is something that's so near and so dear to my heart. It was something that took me a long, long time to really understand and really work on, but once it's mastered, it makes all the difference in the world, and it can make even a weak rider, it can make them extremely dangerous in a group ride. It can make them extremely powerful in a group ride. And that's the idea of cadence control. Cadence control. What exactly am I talking about? Well, cadence control is the ability for any cyclist at any given time to accelerate or decelerate your leg speed in a controlled fashion in any given gear, in any given terrain. Again, I'm going to repeat that because it bears repeating. Write it down. Cadence control is the ability of a cyclist to accelerate or decelerate their leg speed, the tension they put into the pedals and the speed their legs are going around, their cadence, in a controlled fashion. That means being able to range your cadence in any given gear, in any given terrain. So whether you are on a flat, on an ascent, a climb, or a descent, you need to be able to range your cadence within a certain boundary in order to get the most out of a group. You need this to be able to stay with accelerations. You need this to be able to control your cadence and your power output. You need this to be able to shift between different energy systems. I've got several. I've spoken to many groups that I've talked with about different energy systems, the aerobic system and the need to spin to utilize that aerobic system, and the anaerobic system, the need to reduce your cadence, add a lot of pedal tension, and really muscle through something. All right, I've spoken about that to numbers of groups that I've talked with, and it rings true again in any group ride. In order to prevent wearing out one of those systems, you have to be able to switch to the other one. To switch to that other system, you have to have some modicum of cadence control or leg speed control. Now, the range that I like to see at absolute minimum that somebody can be able to range their cadence would have to be about 10 to 15 RPM. So for those of you more experienced cyclists who are riding at a 90 to 95 cadence, that's your chosen cadence, and I know that's a lot of you that I'm coaching or have spoken with, you need to be able to range, for example, if your sweet spot is 90 RPM, you really need to be extremely proficient with cadences between 80 and 100 RPM at absolute minimum. I'd prefer to see you be very, very, you know, capable between 75 and 105 RPM. For those of you who are really looking to be a little more advanced and be able to handle almost anything that any group can throw at you, you really should be able to range between 60 RPM and 120, 130 RPM. That rollover technique that I talk about, that I've talked about in the past, that I actually have available on the training plan section of my website. You go to tailwind-coaching.com, click on the training plans, and go under the high intensity trainer workouts, and you'll see rollover technique. The rollover technique is actually designed to keep you ranging from your cadence, you know, range your cadence down from like 75 to 80 RPM all the way up to your maximum spin of 130 RPM. And in short, it's a way to get you over that climb and get you powering down that descent as fast as you can to stay with that group and even put the screws to that group, to the spindly little climbers in that group. But I digress. Anyway, so many times on group rides when I'm out with a group, I see people who have poor cadence control. They're what I consider a one cadence rider, a one speed rider. And I'm not talking about a single speed rider. That's an entirely different ballgame. A good example is someone who has, you know, that single speed. If you're in that group, you can sit on the front of the pack. And if that single speed rider is behind you, if you accelerate your leg speed by 10 RPM, you add 50 to 75 watts of power, and you ratchet the pace up a couple miles an hour, the first thing you'll hear behind you is the click of a shift, and then if you look back, you'll very often see that one speed rider out of the saddle sprinting up to catch that wheel and get back in the draft. Does that sound like a good thing to do, a good way to, you know, save energy? No, I didn't think so. No, that's really not. In fact, that's one of the worst things you can do, because the name of the game, go back to point number two that I made. The name of the game for a group ride is to stay low, get aero, and save energy. I don't think that sprinting after somebody that added a few RPM worth of cadence and a few watts took off the front is a good way to save energy. Call me crazy, but I just don't see it. In cases like that, it pays to be a rider who has good cadence control, a multi-speed rider. You want to be, in a case like that, if somebody is accelerating in front of you, or the pace line's accelerating, or the road is, you know, pitching downward, you're on a short descent or a shallow descent, you don't want to shift. The first thing that you think about to accelerate your speed with the group is should never be shifting. What you want to be able to do is to increase your cadence, bring that leg speed up to a point where when you shift, when you hit that shift and drop down into a higher gear, you want to have an appropriate leg speed and appropriate leg tension. So if you're a 90 RPM rider, to accelerate something like that, maybe you're going to accelerate your leg speed up to 100 or 110 RPM and then hit that shift, which will drop you back down to 90 or 95 RPM. The tension will be appropriate, the leg speed will be appropriate, and you will accelerate smoothly with the rider in front of you, which is exactly what you should do. And that's what you want in a group ride, is a predictability. Predictable acceleration, predictable group. That allows people to, go back to point number two, get low, stay aero, draft you, and stay on your wheel. And cadence control in itself requires a good warm-up, which would include a good neuromuscular warm-up, aerobic warm-up, and muscular endurance warm-up. Ah, now we see how everything ties together. Okay. But there's more to the equation than just, you know, maintaining your cadence, getting aero, and warming up well. There has to be, otherwise everybody would be a good group rider. Now, there is a certain fitness requirement to that, and that's something that you need to stay with acceleration, stay with groups on climbs and things like that, and that would be VO2 max or zone 5 repeatability. But before I talk about that VO2 max and zone 5 repeatability, one particular thing that I'd like to mention, and I'd like to give you guys a little tidbit, a great workout for your weekly training to work on and to really understand the concept of controlling your cadence and ranging your cadence is what I like to call the single speed workout. Now, if any of you happen to have a fixed gear bike, this is an ideal workout to take the fixed gear out and use. But if you don't have a fixed gear, you can do it on your standard road bike, your standard cyclocross bike, but you just have to basically forget that it has shifters and has any kind of multiple gears. You find yourself a nice stretch of road, maybe a mile or so. Gently rolling is my general preference, but what you want to do is set that bike in one gear, and you want to use your cadence to control your speed throughout that segment and that section of the ride. So you may be up at 130 RPM on a slight descent. You might be down to 60 RPM on a small climb. But what it forces you to do is understand how your cadence and pedal tension works together and how to range those cadences and pedal tensions so that you can become a very effective rider in a group type setting and a group dynamic. So that being said, VO2 max repeatability and VO2 max efforts. So the question would be, why do we need to practice VO2 max or zone 5 repeatability? Well, first we have to discuss really what VO2 max and or zone 5 repeatability is. And VO2 max or zone 5 is simply those efforts which are above threshold being zone 4, but VO2 max would be those above threshold efforts, and they're usually about 105 to 120% of functional threshold power, or above 105% of your threshold, your lactate threshold heart rate. It's typically an effort that you can maintain for 3 to 5 minutes, maybe 3 to 8 minutes if you're very well trained, if you're aerobically fit, anaerobically fit, and you've been riding for more than a couple years. Very typically, VO2 max power is something that's developed. I would almost say it's a climbing specific skill, except it's a very necessary skill for finishing out sprint trains. Triathletes tend to have very poor VO2 max repeatability because the whole point of their sport is endurance based. They're very much zone 3, zone 4 athletes. Those of you who are excellent climbers, decent lead out men for a sprint, something like that, or people who are crit racers tend to have a very good VO2 max repeatability. It's just the nature of the training that you're doing. But that being said, good VO2 max repeatability, you're talking about zone 5 level efforts, VO2 max level efforts, repeated with high zone 3, which would be sweet spot, or zone 4 recovery periods in between. That would be the kind of workouts you would be doing on a daily or weekly basis on your own in solo training. And that's in order to become, more proficient, a little bit better at, ranging your cadence and hitting those VO2 max efforts and then pulling back and recovering. Essentially trying to mimic the concept of hitting the front of a group, doing your 10 to 20 to 30 second pull, and then backing off, sliding back through the group and then hiding from the wind again and recovering at the group's pace. So that's just a short, small workout you can work on during the week in order to figure out, the concept of VO2 max repeatability. If you have hills in your area, the traditional hill repeat of 3 to 5 minutes and then just cruise back down the hill is all well and good, except you don't really want to go cruising down the hill with no pedal tension and no taxation on your aerobic or muscular system. You want to actually put some work into those systems and train your body to recover at closer to threshold power. group rides are not going to wait for you to recover if you come off the front. If you come off the front and you're not ready to rock and roll and get back into the group, you're going to get dropped. And the whole point of this discussion is to keep you from getting dropped, especially if you're a new rider or if you're a rider who's a little less skilled than the group you're riding with. Now, assuming we've got those first four skills down, you've gotten to your group ride early, you've done your little bit of stretching or whatever your pre-ride routine happens to be, your coffee, your tea, whatever it is. You're warmed up well. You started your first 20 minutes of your ride doing your neuromuscular aerobic and muscular endurance warm-up with your really fast, good quality spinning under control. You're hiding in the group. You're staying low. You're staying aero. You're taking that draft off the big guys, and you're following wheels closely. And then you're able to range your cadence, and you're able to repeat your VO2 max efforts. You're still having problems. You're still getting dropped, or the group is still stronger than you. It could be a couple of different things. And one of those situations could certainly be a case where you're just dealing with a group that's just exponentially stronger than you are. And in that case, you're going to get dropped. You may very well get dropped, and you shouldn't feel bad about that. Okay? You need to understand, if you're riding with a group of Cat 1 or Cat 2 guys, and you're, someone who's doing a strong century, you're doing a 6-hour century or 5-hour century, there's a bit of a disconnect there, and you should not really view yourself as a failure for being dropped off of a powerful group like that. Generally, you want to measure your fitness and how you've done in that situation by how long did you stay with them? Were you able to stay with them on the hills? Were you able to challenge them? What successes did you take away from that group ride? But assuming you're on a group ride where you're fairly evenly matched with the rest of the group, perhaps the group is a little stronger than you, and you're already practicing those VO2 max repeatabilities, you're trying to stay with the group, you're ranging your cadence to try and follow those accelerations, maybe you're just not riding smart. One thing that I've noticed with so many riders and so many people that I've coached is that they don't have a concept of short pulls. And I was guilty of this for the longest period of time as well. Okay? Short pulls, 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, no more than a minute. I've had so many people say to me, hey, I keep getting dropped off the group rides and I'm doing my 5-minute pulls and then I get, I just get hammered. I get knocked off the back. My response to them almost every time is, look at the other people in the group. Are they doing 5-minute pulls? If they're doing 5-minute pulls, that means one of two things to me. One, they're dummies. Okay? You just shouldn't be taking 5-minute pulls and burning up that much energy. You're talking about burning a full match pretty much every time you get to the front of the group. And how many matches does the average cyclist have? Okay? A good group rider may have between 2 and 4 matches, maybe 5 matches to burn. And those are those extended VO2 max repeats. Extended meaning those 3-minute efforts, 5-minute efforts, 8-minute efforts. Those are basically your climbs. Okay? You're going to be able to burn a match on a climb. Okay? Do you really want to burn a match when you hit the front of the group? No. Why would you do that? Unless you're really trying to drop somebody off the back that you really don't like, or you're really trying to make a point, or maybe you're coming into a town line sprint or something like that and you're leading somebody out. But generally, you want to save those, 2 to 5 matches for important points during the ride. Now, let's be honest. An important point for you may be in a different point than what's important to me, or important to the guy behind me, or the guy at the back of the line, at the back of the group. Those important points where you burn your matches, that's up to you. But keep in mind that if you're doing 5-minute pulls on the front of the group, A, you're burning up a match that you really could be saving for later on. You could be saving it for that town line sprint or that last climb into town. And B, a lot of people are right behind you and they're just laughing their ass off while they're sitting in your draft, saving 20 to 30, maybe 40% of their energy by staying low, getting narrow, controlling their cadence, and having a proper warm-up. They're just hanging out, and they're just going to be saying, thanks, boss, love you, fact that you pulled, now I'm going to kick your ass when the road turns up, or when it comes to the sprint, I'm going to just rip by you because you don't have any matches left. So think about that. Short pulls. Now, I'm not advocating wheel sucking. I hate wheel suckers, and I will do everything in my power to ride a wheel sucker off my wheel and out of the group just to prove a point. I'll go up to him afterwards and say, hey, do you know why you got ridden out of the group was because you didn't do any work. And that's generally the kind way of doing it. It's very often in some groups that I've been in, you don't take a pull, you're going to get yelled at by the other members of the group. And that's only fair. If you're in the group, take the pull. But it doesn't have to be a long pull. Remember, nobody remembers, hey, you did really awesomely in the beginning of that ride. You hammered your way out of town for that first 10 miles. You absolutely killed it. Now, nobody's going to remember that. They're going to remember that when you filter to the back of the group after that 10-mile pull. They're going to say, nice pull, thanks for pulling, see you next time, as you watch them ride off into the distance. Now, you make your 30-second pulls, you save your matches for when they count, and at the end of the ride, you're going to hear, wow, you know, you were really strong at the end of that. What have you been doing? What training have you been doing, man? You were killing it at the end there. Or, holy crap, I've never seen anybody come by me in a sprint like that. That's amazing. People always remember the last thing that they saw. And if they're seeing you dropping off the back, that's what they're going to remember at the end of the ride. So what would you rather have? Would you rather have a really awesome beginning to a ride and a crappy finish where you roll in 20 minutes behind everybody else? Would you rather have a really slow, uneventful beginning part of the ride and then just kill the end of it? Go ahead. What would you rather have? If you're like me, I'd rather have the second one. I'd rather play dumb, play possum in the beginning of the ride and then just kill it at the important points for me. Now, for me, I'm a climber, so I'm saving my matches for the hills. If you're a sprinter, you're saving your matches for the sprints. It's pretty simple. Choose what you want. Choose where you want to use that energy, and then save enough energy by making short pulls, staying low, being aero, controlling your cadence. Doing all those things will save you the time, save you the energy to use when you deem necessary. So you've warmed up, you've been lollygagging at the back of the group, you're all warmed up, you're staying with those accelerations because your VO2 max repeatability is fantastic, you're doing your short pulls, people are happy, you're pulling, but you're not pulling much, you're doing enough to save energy and keep people happy, and then you're able to attack the group when you need to, or you're able to spend that energy, burn those matches when you want to, when those important points for you come along. You're using the group to your advantage. And this is the key. With these skills, any rider, a beginning rider, can use the group to their advantage. Someone who is, let's put it this way. I've come across riders who, in pure terms of strength, I should be beating them every single time. Every single time. But here's the thing. They're technically better riders, technically smarter riders than I am. So if you're not, if they're technically better than I am, or I'm technically better than you, once I'm using the group better than you are, if I have better cadence control, better VO2 max repeatability, and I'm riding much smarter than you, all I have to do is get you on my wheel, get you pinned into that zone 5 level effort, and just ride smarter, and you won't stick with me. You absolutely will not hang on my wheel. The same way I will not hang on the wheel of somebody who does that to me. So that's the key point of this podcast. If you have only one thing that you remember that you take home, only one skill that you take home, it's this. You can always beat somebody who's stronger than you by riding smart. And maybe beat doesn't mean you beat them to a sprint, or you beat them to the top of the hill. Maybe beat means you actually stay inside that group. You stay with that group for the entire ride. Maybe you get knocked off or you get peeled off by the sprint back into the town. But you stayed with that group the whole time, and you stayed with that group that's stronger than you the whole ride. And you did it not by being stronger, but by being smarter, which is the key to every single group ride that you do. That's the key to being strong on group rides. That's the key to using a group ride to really build your fitness and to really get somewhere and really have, frankly, a lot of fun on group rides. Nobody likes getting dropped off the back of a group ride. It's never fun. But if you can, you know, avoid that with a few simple skills, by all means, go out, find a group, have a great ride. Just stick it into your training plan, just like we talked about last podcast, wherever you need to, in order to get some training benefit out of it. But now you actually can understand the skills needed to actually get that training benefit out of your group rides. And I think that's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank all you folks for listening. As always, if you're listening to me on iTunes, which I know a fair number of you actually are, you can head on over to my website at tailwind-coaching.com, all hosted on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. You can check out my coaching discussion, my coaching blog posts. You can check out plenty of other blog posts about various and sundry things, equipment reviews, things like that. You can also take a look at coaching solutions and training plans if that's what you're if that's what you're looking for. If you have any comments, questions, thoughts or concerns or anything else, really, if you just want to say, you know, good job, or you want to say you suck or whatever the case might be, you can go ahead and email me at CoachRobDC. That's CoachRob, D as in David, C as in Charlie, at gmail.com with any thoughts, questions, concerns, or comments. I do get a fair amount of email, a fair amount of comments, concerns, and questions, things like that, and I do read them all. But it might take me a couple of days to reply to you if that's what you're looking for. So don't, you know, don't worry if you haven't heard from me in a day or two. You know, I like to try and get back to people as soon as possible. But particularly if I'm having a high volume day in terms of email and questions and things like that, or if I'm doing consults or training, writing training plans, usually it may take me a day or two to get back to you. But don't worry, rest assured that I do read all my email and all my questions, and I will get back to you if that's what you if that's what you require. Until then, folks, take these tips, apply them to your next group ride, even though it's probably going to be a winter group ride and it's going to be social. Don't kill your social group rides. You know, if that's what you're into, don't kill them. The guys at the coffee shop probably won't appreciate it. But either way, take these tips, do well in your group rides, have some fun. Thanks for listening. Ride safe, ride happy, get strong, be well, and you'll hear from me very soon.